What's up, internet? My name's Nerdy.
And I'm Claru.
And this is Discussing Daggerheart.
Let's go.
That's right. We're back for episode 3. Today, we are starting a 3-part series where we will be breaking down and reviewing all of the class and subclass features. 3 classes at a time. If we try to do all 9 classes, all 18 subclasses, one video, too much.
Too long.
Too much.
Yeah. Everyone would be like, too long. Turn it off. Get out of here.
So what are the 3 classes and whose subclasses we'll be doing today?
We're going to be talking about bards, druids, and guardians because we are going to go in alphabetical order.
That's right. We don't want to show any favoritism here. We want to give you all the raw deets as raw as we can.
Yeah. So raw that sometimes we don't even cook it right.
We're gonna be going so raw that you're gonna be like, wow, they went by the rules of the book.
Wow, yeah.
Rules as written.
Literally.
Speaking of rules as written, we were like, oh, we're gonna have a segment at the top of our show where we talk about the things in Discussing Daggerheart that we got wrong while we were discussing Daggerheart. A segment that might not need a name because last week, guess what?
When we were discussing Daggerheart,
we didn't get anything wrong.
Crushed it. Apparently. Maybe. Yet.
Not yet. Not according to the comments yet. But we did have a lot of comments. Mostly, the most contentious thing, I think, in those comments from last week's video were people talking about the money system. And I don't know where you fall on it fully. Mm-hmm. I am personally of a mind that I think it falls short. And I agree with a lot of the commenters who agree with that. Where do you fall on the money system being handfuls, chests, bags, or handfuls, bags, chests, hoard, fortune?
Yes. I don't love it. I'm not someone who has to keep track of every dollar and every ration when I'm, you know, playing make-believe. However, I think that that is going to vary from table to table, and that if Daggerheart wants to appeal to more people, have something set in place and then have the option to decide whether or not to use it.
Yeah, my position on it is that they say Daggerheart is built for long-term campaigning, which I think inherently means the economics of the party are going to have a little bit more scrutiny than in a shorter form game. I also am of the mind that it is easier to say, hey guys, we're going to not worry about this part of the game, than it is to say, hey guys, I had to, as the GM, invent something for this game. Or what I think most people do is, hey guys, I pulled this from another game system.
Yeah.
I think that because this is a flagship system for Critical Role and Darrington Press, and because of the like scope of it, because they want it to be something you run for a year, I am hoping that by the time this comes out, they have a little bit of a better framework for how it works.
Yeah, and you don't have to use it if you don't want to. Like, that's the best part of these kinds of games. But leaving that kind of gaping hole in your like rule set is going to be a bit off-putting to some people and downright frustrating for others. And, you know, Daggerheart has got some really cool stuff in it, and I don't want people to be turned away by, like, one thing like that.
And I don't think they would be. I do think, though, people are already making jokes about the fact that its smallest currency is handfuls, and this is a system of races that have a much wider variety than I think D&D or a lot of other games that I've played, where a handful in Daggerheart is such a weird system to use. Even if they keep this system, I would change your baseline, because what, like, we've already made the jokes in our streams of like, what is a handful to a fairy and what is a handful to a giant, and how does that word make sense to the characters in the world?
It doesn't, because if I am a fairy and I got paid for a job one handful, but I also wanted to stay at a night for one handful, it's still a handful either way. And so it is kind of arbitrary and doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, so lots of interesting comments. Thank you to everyone who commented on that. We appreciate you being here. And if we mess up today, comment that. Oh, yeah, everyone on the podcast feed. Thank you so much.
Hi, podcast listeners.
Give us a 5-star rating on the Roleplay Really podcast feed, please.
That would be nice.
It will help people find us. And that's all I want, is to be found. I have been locked in this basement for so long.
You will be found.
We're going to talk about bards in a second. But before we do that, we got to talk about the sponsor of this video. That's right. We are brought to you by Gamersubs.
Gamersubs. Get your waifu cup at gamersubs.gg and use the code Claroos, Claroos.
Now you might be thinking, you're holding a drink. Is Gamersubs a drink company? No, they're a powder company. that makes drinks.
Not for skiing. Like,
no, they send you a powder that you turn into some of the most delicious beverages known to mankind. This one here is Anime Girl Thigh.
Hell yeah.
Gamerceps is where we get the energy to do all of the things that we do. And we have been affiliated with them for so long. We love them. They've been so good to us. And we also drink the product every day.
Yeah, we only really talk about brands that we ourselves use and love. And I love Gamerceps.
Delicious.
It's tasty as heck.
Yeah.
It has no sugar, which is great for an addict like me who craves sugar all the time. I can get a little sweet treat without, you know, a freaking... How many, like... handfuls of sugar in a Pepsi, do you think? It has, like, vitamins and other, like, nutritional benefits as well. So Jesus. It's not just caffeine.
Use coupon code CLAROOS, that's CLAROOS, for 10% off your order at gamersops.gg. CLAROOS. Back to the programming of Discussing Daggerheart, part one of the classes and subclasses. Part one of the part one. That's right, we're talking about bards. Clarice, what is the first... Ooh, we have to start with our class feature first.
Yes.
Now, if you're wondering, we have the cards out for all the subclasses, but the class features do not come on a card, unlike everything else.
They come on the character sheet, because when you make a character, you actually you have to use a character-specific sheet.
Yes. So each class has a specific sheet that they use. Mm-hmm. For the bard, the class feature can be found in the bottom left corner on all of them. Mm-hmm. For the bard, that is Rally. Mm-hmm. Rally, which is not the rally that Lazel gets in Baldur's Gate 3, which I use all of the time. Those 8 temporary hit points are great. No, this is Daggerheart's rally. At the beginning of a session, place a d6 on the spot to the right with the lowest value side 1 facing up. There is a little dot on your character sheet for where you're supposed to put your dice.
Yeah.
When anyone in your party rolls with fear, increase the rally's die value by 1. So you have your own counter. In Daggerheart, it encourages your DM to use a lot of counters. And so this is a counter that you use. When Fariha was playing a bard in our 2-shot that we did with the penultimates, she did such a good job of keeping track of that on her own.
Bless her.
I'm not keeping track of that for you. But and don't expect your DM to keep track of it. If you do not keep track of your rally die, you don't get your rallies.
It's on you.
When you increase the value to 6, remove the die, describe how you rally the party, and give every character who listens a 1d6 rally die. They can spend this die to roll it and add the result to any action roll, reaction roll, or damage roll. Mm-hmm. If your rally die hasn't finished its countdown by the end of a session, distribute the current value shown on the hope on the die as hope amongst your party, splitting it any way you choose and removing the die. Mm-hmm. The rally die you distribute increases to 1d8 at level 5.
Hell yeah.
The rally die you distribute increases to a 1d8, but the rally die for the countdown remains at 6. So it's not like you get it less.
Less often, yes. You still put down the d6 for the counter, but everyone else gets a d8.
Clarus, how do you feel about rally as a class ability for the bards?
Honestly, I thought it came in real handy for our sessions.
Yeah.
So I'm into it. I think it's very fun. I think it's it is encouraging more role play to be like, oh, the dice hit 6. Mm-hmm. What can I do as a character, as a player, to like rally my party?
Yeah, the one argument I have against it, and the one way in which I'm not sure how I feel about it, is it does feel a little bit like an ability that is not the player's choice. That it does just kind of happen, right? Like, this is it is something that it doesn't matter who keeps track of it. It is going to happen at a specific time. And one of the things I do like about Bardic Inspirations in D&D is the bard's moment of choosing who it goes to, right?
Okay.
Oh, that person's got a thing coming up. I've got let me give you a Bardic Inspiration at the end of my turn because I want you to do X, Y, and Z. Because you have a big moment and I want to inspire that moment.
It is more passive, for sure.
It is, when it happens, is a little passive. And then it almost becomes like, oh, everyone take a D6 to do with because I have this passive. Mm-hmm. And granted, a lot of games have passives. So it's not a negative.
Just different.
It is just interesting that it is...
Bless you.
Something the bard, it just kind of happens if the bard is paying attention.
Yes. Please pay attention. Yeah. The DM is doing a lot of work already.
But the ability itself is very useful. And the fact, let's be honest, you roll with fear a lot in this game.
Yeah.
So this is an ability that comes into play a lot. And that's what I like about
it. That counter is always ticking up.
Yeah. The Daggerheart as a system as a whole gives you a lot of plus 1d6s to your rolls.
Mm-hmm.
A lot. Partially because every time you help someone, they add a plus d6 to the roll, right? And so there's a lot of this in the game, and it is another way for everyone to get it. It does kind of remove the, like, I can only help one person at a time, because a song should inspire a group. You know, it's hard to sing a song to one person. Although Ken will try Jolene, on the beach.
Jolene. That's very
I love
specific.
That I went to the Barbie movie and you went to
Dolly Parton, our Dolly Lord and Savior.
Parton. I mean, it's probably in the ether because Beyonce released that song this week.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
It's definitely why it was in my brain. Not her I haven't version, heard it yet, but.
You it's haven't good? Heard? Oh, no. Listen. There are some vocal acrobatics in that song that make you go, oh.
I love it. You love to hear it.
But yeah, I think the rally is a good ability. I think that for some bards, it's going to be a little bit like, oh, yeah, I got the thing. And I wonder how you. It's going to be up to the bard to make it a little bit more interesting for them rather than it just being a passive that kind of automatically goes out to the group.
Yeah, for sure. If you choose to play a bard,
you have two options.
You have two options.
What's option number one?
Option number one is Troubadour.
Troubadour!
And your spellcasting ability is Presence for
Presence!
Which it doesn't seem that important because it's Presence for the other one as well. So.
Well, but you just need to know that.
Yeah, this is just for you to know. It's just information. When you select this foundation, describe a unique instrument you carry and add it to your inventory. You may perform each song once per long rest. So you get three options.
So you get so it's basically an ability that gives you three different abilities per long rest.
Yes. That's and you can pick whatever is most relevant to the party at the time. So, option number one, when you play a relaxing song during a moment of calm, you and any close allies heal one hit point. Option number two, when you play an epic song during a battle, make a target temporarily vulnerable.
Great.
Which means you get advantage, and that's nice.
Yeah, vulnerable just means that the target is in a state of discombobulation that allows you to get a plus d6 to your roll. There's a lot of add a plus d6 to your roll.
Because it's advantage, right? Yeah. When you option number three is when you play a heartbreaking song at any time, you and any close allies take a hope.
Aww. Sweet. From a heartbreaking song?
Yep. You sing something real sad and everyone takes that to heart. They feel emotional about it, I guess.
I just feel like I can't imagine the bard breaking out like, in the arms of an angel. And me being like, yeah. I feel hopeful now.
If I was like sitting around the campfire and someone whipped out a guitar and started playing Concrete Angel, I think I would just cry and go to bed depressed. You know what I mean? Like, so heartbreaking. I don't know. Maybe just like an emotional song, but apparently heartbreak makes you hopeful.
You know what? Teach their own.
Sure.
I really like that this ability kind of counteracts automatically the issue that I had with Rally, in that you choose when you use it. You have three different abilities, really.
Yeah, you're very balanced in the passive and what's the opposite?
Active.
There we go.
Yeah, I like that it is in differentiating itself from Bardic Inspiration, which is, you know, it's hard not to talk about the Bard's Nest game without kind of bringing up that game, right? I think that game. I think that this, having one of them affect the targets is really fun.
Yeah.
I think being able to use a song to do something that affects the turn of the GM, or not the turn of the GM, but your party's ability to hit somebody on the other team, I think is really fun. I love the idea that, because it's an epic song that makes them vulnerable. So I just love the idea of like playing like The Devil Went Down to Georgia. And
see, I went to HSD, like, but that
same idea, literally the same thing, right? is having a bardic duel with the devil. But yeah, I love, like, you start singing Beelzebos. He's gonna make you gargle mayonnaise, and the enemy's like, "Wait, what?" And then they just get a club to the face.
Take two. They're like, "What did you just
say? Did you just say he's gonna make you gargle mayonnaise?" And you're like, "Yeah, Jack Black said that in a song." And you're like, well, "Jesus Christ, how thick is his?" Anyway,
moving on.
Great ability. Yeah, lots of fun here.
When you level up, there's a lot of different things that you can do.
Yeah.
One of those things, when you reach level 5, is that you can take a specialization in Troubadour, all right?
Yeah, so your your subclass ability comes in three levels. All of them do. There is the foundation, the specialization, and the mastery. If you take the option to multi-class,
yes.
at any point, you will lose out on the ability to get your mastery in your original class.
Yes.
And I think that for multi-classing in Daggerheart, it is going to be a big question of whether it is worth it.
Yeah.
Considering how... I really do think that these subclasses are really important, how these play.
Definitely.
You're going to have to want to... There's going to have to be something really specific you want out of another subclass feature in order for it to be worth it. Because yeah. you're basically just opening yourself up to other codexes and also getting the foundation feature from another subclass.
Yeah, which might play really well with whatever you want to do, but is it worth it to lose out on the mastery? That's going to be a question that varies at every table.
Yeah.
So the specialization for Troubadour Bard is your rallying songs also help steal the courage. Steal. Oh, that kind of steal. I was like, I think they spelt it wrong.
Yeah, it's more like the...
They don't steal courage, they... Steal courage. I don't know how else to, like...
Yeah.
That's great for podcast listeners. I'm sure you knew exactly what I was trying to get across.
For people who are non-English speakers, English is a mess of a language.
Yes. So this is S-T-E-E-L. The courage of those who listen.
Yeah.
Anybody who receives a rally die from you via your rally ability can also choose to gain a hope or clear a stress.
Yeah, I think it is interesting to vary the... subclass feature and not just make it a hat on your foundation features hat.
Yes.
It goes to your original class feature and changes that instead.
Yeah.
Which is a fun way to move the ability forward. And I think that this is really helpful. I think that there's going to be times where you already have advantage or if you're in a combat where, let's say you're doing really well on getting that hope ability off and it is super effective, right? You've got like this one ability that's crushing it. You might rather not take the 1d6 to damage and instead take a hope to be able to get that ability off again.
Yeah.
So I think that this really makes that class feature that the bards have of rally so much more variable for the situation that your characters might end up in.
Yeah, you also do accumulate stress pretty quick, especially if you are taking spells or features from your domain deck.
Or just rolling with fear a lot, or, right?
You can't.
No, you take stress. You can't. Your DM can give you a stress if you fail with fear, right? It's one of the things that can happen as a negative.
Right.
So I'm saying that
if you fail with fear, yes, absolutely.
If you're failing a lot with fear and you're going into a fight and you get that rally right before the fight, you might want to clear a stress to have an extra ability to use or something like that.
Very, very useful. So I do love that. I think that it is very useful.
Or if your stress is full, you're going to want to clear that stress.
Yeah.
You're going to use that rally to clear that stress because you don't want to start taking health points on one HP damage.
Yeah.
On one damage point, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Once you cannot take a stress anymore, you take hit points and that's rough.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's why at low levels, I think that this game is really lethal because you fail with fear a few times. Mm-hmm. Suddenly you have stress going into a fight. You only have 5 stress or whatever it is that you're starting with. And you can run through your 6 hit points real fast.
Yes, absolutely. The mastery for Troubadour Bard is that...
Which you can't get to level 8. So you can upgrade with your upgrade choices. Between 5 and 7, you're allowed to take your specialization.
Mm-hmm.
Or between 8 and 10, you're allowed to take your mastery. If you don't take your specialization through 5 and 7, you can take it between 8 and 10, but you cannot take your mastery then.
Wait, you can't?
Not if you wait until level 8 to take your specialization.
Why?
So if you don't level up your... because otherwise you would be... Multiclassing wouldn't cut you out of your mastery.
But wait, no. Because if I was level 8...
Yeah.
And I was becoming level 9, I could take my specialization and then from level 9 to 10...
No, you can't.
If
you look at the character sheet, I'll throw this on screen for you guys in the edit. There's only one thing that you can do. You can only take one. So you can take your specialization here, or you can take your specialization or mastery here.
Right. Yeah. Right. Okay. I did not notice that. You are limited in what you can do for each level up based on what level it is. Did not realize that.
If you have taken your specialization between 5 and 7, between 8 and 10, you can take your mastery, which for Troubadour means...
For Troubadour, that is, your craft rivals the greats, your skill and creativity unbounded. You may perform each of your foundation songs an additional time per long rest.
Oh, shit. So you basically get double of your own ability.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, interesting.
I mean, that's pretty nice. Especially if you find... here's one of those things where...
Faria had used that in our one shot. Because yeah. She used a lot... She used those songs to clear one HP a lot.
Yeah. So this is one of those things where... If perhaps as a bard, you find that you are not using your foundation ability, then maybe the mastery ability isn't going to help you that much.
Yeah.
And you multiclass.
Multiclassing might be more useful.
Right? Or if you're like, oh no, this has come in clutch so many times.
Mm-hmm.
I need that mastery ability right away at level 8. I can see both options being totally viable.
I agree with you 100%. I think that I would... take it based on how I've been playing the game.
Yes.
This is one of those things in a one-shot I would take it because doing multi-class in one-shot is always a little bit complicated to me.
Yes,
it's a lot to run for like 1 3-hour session. But in a long-term game, I can see being like, you know what? 3 is enough in a day. I've got a lot of other abilities. I don't really feel like I need this. Maybe I want something from like a druid or like from a guardian that lets me have that whatever their base feature is.
You only get one.
What?
Oh, you may perform each song once per long rest. Oh,
yeah.
You're right.
So this takes you from 3 songs to 6.
That's pretty badass.
It's a great ability.
I can't see myself ever not wanting to take it personally, but...
Well, but you might find that you're squishy and, like, there's a guardian thing that you're like, oh, if I take
this
that, if I multiclass...
Depending on how you're
getting rid of my
balanced.
Squish. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I definitely think that's going to be circumstantial, for sure.
Yeah, Bard Troubadour, it's funny because it's one of the ones that we've actually played with at level 2 and at level 10.
Mm-hmm.
And so we kind of know how it plays a little bit more than some of the other ones we're going to talk about today. And I like it a lot. I think that there's a lot of variety here. I think that there are... having an ability that you can proc 6 times per long rest at level 8... feels pretty good to
pretty
me.
Pretty nice. Yeah.
Probably level 9. Honestly, you're probably going to take level 8. You're probably always going to want to up your proficiency, and you're probably going to always want to up your like spellcast ability. And then at level 9, you'll take your. I watched a whole video that someone broke down like a lot of the math of the game and when you should do things. It was very fascinating. Learned a lot. I'll shout out that creator here because I thought their video had a lot of really good information in it.
I love that.
Mathematically, there's kind of like a right way to level up in Daggerheart, which is I feel a little bit weird about.
Interesting.
But
I would have thought that because of the variety of it, there would have been less of that like min-maxing feel. But yeah.
The problem with the leveling up is when you have the ability to up your proficiency.
Yep.
You have to take it because it is. If you level up and you aren't dealing that additional damage die on every single attack that you make, so many of these skills scale with proficiency.
True.
And so it is the difference between 4d6 and 5d6, which is kind of huge in
which
a way
could be
that...
one hit point or six. Well, not hit points, but like 1 or 6, yeah.
Yeah. 3 extra songs per day might not be as mathematically useful as that.
Sure, yeah.
Especially because there's already so many ways to get advantage in Daggerheart, the like giving people vulnerable... there's so many other things that might already be doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas there isn't a lot that's going to give you that isn't going to up your proficiency on everything that your proficiency goes up in.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay.
Let's get into Bard subclass number 2. I get to read these, don't I? Because you did the last 3.
Go for it.
This is the wordsmith. Notice how I'm not singing because this is more of the storyteller or teller, you could say, if you watch our Dragonlance game.
Every Saturday is at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Nerdy Nightly channel.
It's getting good. We actually fought a dragon. Dragon. Wordsmith, foundation. The spellcast is presence. Is there any class where your spellcast is different based on your subclass? Because I'm surprised this isn't just on the character sheets.
Yeah.
If it's not. You get the ability Heart of a Poet, which I believe you keep under your floorboard in your kitchen. It's a good book. When speaking, it's a short story, but when speaking... to a person you're trying to impress, persuade, or offend, use at least 3 rhyming words and spend a hope to add 1d4 to the action roll against them.
So this requires a little bit of work on the player's part.
Wow, I'm not sure what 3 rhyming words, like... Yeah, wow. I feel like I would love this. I can see this being anxiety inducing for players and being like, oh, I'm not playing a wordsmith. I don't want to try and rhyme live at the table.
Yep. Or even like, with your friends, like if you're like not a person who is maybe artistically or like even like linguistically inclined, like I think you might be like, I don't know, I would be nervous to take.
I would also be
like, what if I can't come up with anything? Do I not get my ability? Like,
yeah. That's very funny. I love that. At first I was like, oh, I love this, and then I was like, oh, I feel so bad for the person that's like, god, what rhymes with orange? Your mother looks like a door hinge. 1d4.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I love that there's like a real world thing that you have to do, and also you have to spend a hope.
I wonder if this feels cruel. You could just like keep a Dr. Seuss book at the table. You know what I mean?
Like, I do not like green eggs and ham. I do not like them, Sam. I am.
You're like one fish, two fish, red fish, blue fish.
1d4.
The same word, but it rhymes.
Just you have to quote a different Eminem song every single time you use this.
I can't tell you what it really is. I can only tell you what it feels like.
You haven't even gotten to the rhyme yet.
And right now, it's a steel knife in my windpipe. None of that rhymes.
I mean, bike, pipe. It's a slant rhyme.
You know what? Rap doesn't have to rhyme to be good, and that's okay.
But this has to rhyme, Clarus.
It has to rhyme.
You know 99% of the guys at the table are going to be like, his palms are sweaty, knees weak, arms are heavy, there's vomit on his sweater already, mom's forgetting he's nervous. Yeah, but on the surface, he looks calm and ready to drop bombs, but he keeps...
What if you just, like, worked it out with your DM? You're like, what if I just read a haiku instead?
All right. You also get the ability Rousing Speech. Uh-huh. Once per long rest, you can give a heartfelt, inspiring speech. All allies that can hear you clear a stress. This makes me think immediately of, there's an episode of Critical Role in Campaign 1 where Keyleth has the, I think it's called Inspiring Leader. Leader speech, something like that.
Yeah.
But she had lost her voice. She couldn't talk that episode. And so she did an interpretive dance as her speech. And I was... so high, and I was crying from laughter. It was great.
I love that.
Yeah, clearing stress. Guys, I honestly, the more I think about this game, the more important clearing stress is.
For sure.
Getting rid of those stresses is gonna be a big part of playing Daggerheart. Mm-hmm. And so I think this ability is really useful.
Definitely. Yeah, it just depends, I think, on how intimidating the having to actually like rhyme portion of it is.
Well, no, that's the other one. This one you don't have to.
Sure, I guess you could never use Heart of a Poet.
Or be like, guys, I'm not going to rhyme. But, like, let's pretend I rhymed. And the GM's going to be like, that's fine. I'm not going to make you rhyme every time you do this.
Sure, yeah.
I would, because I'm an asshole. But, like, most GMs are much nicer than I am.
We just, like, spend time, like, writing down rhyming words.
Oh, yeah. I expect you to... Hey, Teller... Robin, who plays Teller in our game, has a bunch of little stories written for their spells. And so...
I love it.
You can do it.
Yeah.
Come up with some rhymes.
Absolutely.
Bat, cat, mat. 1d4.
Could you imagine? you just say words.
Yeah,
you're wait. Like, store, floor, whore.
You just have to say three rhymes. That's all it says. It doesn't say you have to say a couplet. It says use at least three rhyming words and spend a hope. So you just have to say three rhyming words. Yeah.
I guess so, yeah.
I love that you went with store, floor, whore.
Well, I started with store and then the other two just...
That's Freudian. The specialization for the bard is, you know, your moving words can boost the morale of the group. When you use your skills as linguist to raise a member of your group up, I bet you do use those linguist skills to raise somebody up. Once per session, you can do one of the following. Allow them to find a mundane object or tool they need. Help an ally by spending a hope as usual, but roll a d8 instead of a d6 for your advantage die. Okay.
Okay.
That's pretty great. And give them an additional downtime activity during their next rest. Wait.
Well, that's the best one.
Yeah.
Like, by far.
That's an awesome ability.
Yeah.
Like, and it's so much better than giving somebody a plus...
Two?
One. No, but it's functionally a plus one, right?
What? For the advantage?
Adding a d8 to a d6 is functionally a plus one to the roll, right?
Maybe.
Because you're not, like, it might be an eight, But it just mathematically skews a little. Same way that like rolling a d6 mathematically is like a 3.5, right?
Sure.
Yeah, that
3.5? It does matter.
Statistically, this is the math video that I was watching. When you add a d6 to the duality dice roll, you are like mathematically adding 3.5 to the average roll.
Okay. Yeah. Sure.
I am not a mathematician. I'm just going... this might be a thing we talk about next week on discussing the things about Daggerheart that we got wrong in discussing Daggerheart. That was the math that was explained to me, and I'm choosing to believe it, because great. I believe scientists.
I love that.
The other two abilities I don't even fucking care about. Give an additional downtime activity to someone during their next rest is so fucking great. Good.
Super clutch. Like, maybe if there was something really, really, really important that, like, you know, you were like, we gotta go all in on this... You could do the others.
I also love the idea that you're like, oh my god, we could solve this puzzle if only we had a fork. And the bard goes, wait a minute. Once upon a time, in a land not so different from our own. Jeez. And then the fighter's like, oh hey guys, look, that story inspired me to find this fork.
Yeah. Oh, I had to use this. I met a mermaid the other day, and she gave it to me. It was weird. Anyways, I have a fork.
This reminds me of the nomad ability. That's like, you have a bag that has a bunch of shit in it. Yep. And so like when you need something small, it's probably in that bag.
Yep. Cool. Yeah, definitely similar. But we got one more card, which is Wordsmith Mastery.
The Mastery. The rally die you distribute increases to a d10. Well, fuck.
Okay, that's pretty great.
Yeah, that's much better than d6. In addition, whenever you help an ally, when you narrate the moment as if you were writing the tale of their heroism in a memoir, your advantage die to help them is a d10.
Okay.
Wow.
Support class for the win. Let's
so
go.
If someone is an Orderborn, Orderborn's the one where you can change your hope die to a d20, right? They are rolling a d20 with hope and a d12 with fear, plus a d10. So you're rolling out of like a 40 at that point.
I mean, yeah.
Big dice. Yeah. Big number, go burr.
One of those things where it's like, if you got, if there is a moment, you know, that if there's something that everything hinges on, if there is like a out of this world, like we must succeed, otherwise everybody dies kind of moment, you got something in your back pocket for it.
That, to me, is a real mastery ability. Yeah. Every single time you help someone, which Daggerheart really, because of how much hope you get, Daggerheart really incentivizes you to use the help action. But not that it's not an action in this game, but that's the language I'm used to. It encourages helping because there's hope as a cost for helping is such a minimal cost.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
That it just mechanically makes sense for this bard to constantly be using hope to help because you're going to get it back.
Yeah.
And a d10 is a big addition to a roll.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of those like things that's like kind of silly in like Baldur's Gate and D&D. If you enter a room and there's that like perception check that pops up, it's like, if you're in Baldur's Gate, you're like, well, there's something here, otherwise that wouldn't happen, right?
Let me go to camp and get a different companion who didn't fail.
So that they don't have to fail it. And then in D&D, it's like kind of one of those things where it's, you know, I would like to inspect the body, see if there's anything important on it. Ah, well, I rolled a 2. Like, some DMs won't let other players then do the same action because it's like, well, no, somebody already did it. But in a
which is the way that I roll. I'm like, you don't all individually get to roll. Or if or if there's a reason for someone else to try it, the DC is higher for the second person than it was for the first.
For sure.
Yeah.
But like for a game that is role play based and you are supposed to be working together as a group functionally, like, you know, everybody would like take a look through. It's like, oh, I can't find my keys. All right, well, good luck with that. No, suddenly it's like, okay, well, I'm gonna check where you check to make sure that they're not there, or like where I'm gonna look over here while you look over there.
Yeah.
There are things like that I think are just that just make more sense if you are playing the game as a group.
Yeah, and my thing for how I handle the help action in this game is that if you are helping someone, they roll their duality dice and you roll your hope advantage so that both of the people involved in the action are getting to roll.
Mm-hmm.
I think that for the players, it's a little bit more fun to be like, oh, I'm going to help them. I'm giving you a +3. I think that mechanically at the table, that just brings everybody into the fact that they're helping a little bit more than being like, roll a d6 along with your duality dice, and then that person does everything. As a GM, I found it just integrated the help to between the players a little bit stronger from a play perspective. And
it feels
just
more collaborative.
People like rolling dice. And so the more people are rolling dice at the table, especially people who play a lot of these games, are more likely to be people who enjoy that as a physical action. I don't know. I think that the help action is great here. Mm-hmm. Getting a D10 is such a boost over D6.
Yeah.
In a way that a D8 is a little bit of one, right? So it is a mastery ability. Yeah. And it isn't a like once per rest. It's every single time you help.
Yeah.
D10.
Yeah. Great. This feels like
you do have to explain it though.
Yeah.
You have to narrate it as if you are writing the tale of their heroism in a memoir, mm-hmm. which is so specific.
I think you can work with your GM to you know, finesse that for you specifically.
All right, we did bards. Clarus, what's next?
Well, we're going to talk about druids, which means you need to pull up a druid character sheet.
Oh, my God.
Because we need to talk about their class ability before we can actually really dive into what you get in addition to that. We want to start at level one.
The druids actually have two class features. At level one.
What?
Yeah, the first is Wild Touch. You can perform harmless, subtle effects that involve nature at will. Example, causing a flower to rapidly grow, summon a slight gust of wind, or start a campfire, etc. So basically this is, there's an equivalent in D&D called Druidcraft. This is essentially Druidcrafting.
Sure, okay, yeah.
It's cute. It's more for roleplay. It's not something... the amount that you're allowed to druidcraft is not enough to functionally break a puzzle or a monster.
Yeah.
I'm telling you right now, that isn't how it works.
Just in case, you know, you want to ask your DM. We already told you first.
Can I druidcraft so many flowers in their mouth that they suffocate and die? No.
No.
The second thing that they get, the useful one, is beast form. When you mark a stress to it just says mark a stress. I can't read. I am dyslexic. Mark a stress to transform into a magical creature in the beast form list, equal to your level or lower. You lose the use of your features, equipment, and domain cards, but gain the features, attack trait, and armor score of the creature. You can drop out of this form at any time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that this one is fun because it is sort of unlimited at level one.
Yeah.
As long as you're able to clear your stresses.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have a bunch of, you just can turn into animals. And
it's pretty fun.
That's why you play a druid, right?
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. Mm-hmm. So you can turn it. Although, when I play Circle of Spores Druids, I don't actually use the wild shape, just usually for like roleplay reasons.
Yeah, because you're usually in your like, what's that?
Symbiotic
entity.
Yeah, form. Yeah. I mean, yeah. You can use it in different ways. I just find that it is fun to put certain limitations on a character based on like who they are as a person or their backstory, like whatever it is. But beast form is sick.
One thing I don't know about the beast form,
mm-hmm.
And how it is maybe different from D&D. It doesn't say anything about your health.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't actually think that your beast form has a separate health pool from your regular health pool, which is a change.
Right.
Yeah, which is a change from D&D.
So that you can't just infinitely wild shape and have infinite health.
Yeah, Circle of Moon at level 20 is basically, you're basically unlimited health, right?
Yeah.
Because you can just, it's wild. Mm-hmm. Being able to bonus action shift into anything with 150 health, you know.
Yeah,
it's pretty wild. It is crazy.
Yeah.
But it does seem, from what I can read, and maybe the comments will correct me, it does seem like you are, when you beast shape into a mouse, that mouse has the same HP that you were playing with as your druid form.
Yeah, because when we were playing, Ellen was a druid.
Shailish.
And she had like different beast form like sheets, different like stats and whatnot. And HP was not specified, which to me means that it is just whatever
is. I have those
is,
here.
Oh, they might be. But it's just what is on your sheet. The cool thing about beast form is that...
they don't have any health, but they do have a different armor score.
They have different armor scores, and also they can do cool things. Like, sometimes in wild shape, you're just taking whatever hits the hardest or has the most health.
Yeah.
Whereas this is definitely, again, geared more towards the roleplay of it.
Well, and I want to read some of these. Yeah. Like, at level one, you can turn into a aquatic scout, which you can breathe and move naturally underwater. It had so each of these have abilities. There's a lot here. We're not going to go over all of them right now.
Yeah.
At level 7, you can turn into a great predator, like a saber-toothed tiger. It gives you the ability Vicious Maul. When you successfully attack a creature, you can spend a hope to make them temporarily vulnerable, giving the next person advantage on them. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of abilities in beast form. You also, no matter what, get a bonus to your evasion. So you take your base evasion score, your level 1 beast forms get +2. Actually, pack predators only get a +1. But at level 9, your massive behemoth gets a +4 to evasion. Mm-hmm. So at level 7. So like if you already have a high evasion, getting into your beast form could give you an even higher evasion as a direwolf. And so you might not be getting hit as much.
Yeah.
Which honestly, evasion is so useful because not getting hit is so much better than taking stress when you want to be taking stress to clear to use those big powerful abilities.
Yeah, absolutely.
What's the first
the foundation so if you become a druid, you can become a warden of the elements, and your spell casting ability is instinct. First thing you get is elemental incarnation. Mark a stress to embody an elemental spirit from the list below, lasting for up to 1 hour or until you use this ability again. This ability can be used during and overlap with beast form.
Oh, cool. Okay.
So you can become a fire, earth, water, or air elemental. They each do something different. So fire, when an enemy in melee range deals damage to you, they take 1d8 magical damage. Pretty cool. Earth is you get a +2 to your armor score.
Great.
Pretty cool. Water, you have advantage on agility rolls and can breathe underwater.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then air, you gain a +2 to evasion.
Wow.
Yeah. The fact that these can stack with beast form, I think is really, really cool.
Yeah, especially at high levels. Like, if you turn into...
You could be a fire dire wolf.
You
know what I mean?
Turn into a shark.
Sure.
Which gives you a +4 evasion in an air form that gives you +2 evasion. So you have a +6 evasion as a shark. That's pretty great.
That's awesome.
I think that from a roleplay perspective, like, what do your four forms look like, right? What are you doing? It kind of reminds me of the Circle of the Stars druid that Goblin played in Roleplay Relay 1, mm-hmm. where she was always shifting her form to kind of change the abilities that she could use throughout the combats.
Yeah, and I love that. I do love how much, like, roleplay opportunity is here.
Yeah.
If you really love to get into the nitty-gritty of, like, describing, like, what your character looks like, how it feels, how it presents, that kind of stuff, I think this can be really exciting for that kind of player.
Yeah, and honestly, like, if you're playing a dwarf in this game where you have that sturdy ability and you want to stack that here with the earth thing that gives you a +2 to your armor score, mm-hmm. where you're really like, hey, I am going to bring that damage. You're fighting something that you know is going to be a high damage character. You bring that dwarf character that's just like taking those hits, reducing the damage by half, then reducing it by your armor score, which is a +2.
Yeah.
Depending on the kind of character that you're playing, those forms could have a lot of different variety for a lot of different kind of play.
Absolutely.
What's the specialization level of this elemental druid?
So once per short rest while in elemental incarnation, you can give the area within close range of you an effect from the list below in accordance with that element.
Okay.
This effect follows you until you take severe damage or the GM spends fear to end it.
Oh, so it's like a temporary in Daggerheart means basically until
the DM spends fear to end it. Two fear, I think it is, whatever it is.
I can't remember. It might just be one.
Okay. Yes. So if you are in your fire incarnation, whenever an enemy marks one or more hit points, they also take a stress.
Damn, okay.
Yeah. Earth is you and your allies gain +1 armor score. For you and everybody else, that's pretty great. Water, after an enemy acts, you can spend a hope to move them anywhere within close range of them.
When an enemy acts?
After an enemy acts, you can spend a hope to move them anywhere within close range of them.
Damn, move them 30 feet? That's pretty great.
Yeah. Definitely useful. And then air, if you or an ally get damaged by a ranged attack, reduce it by 1d8. It's basically like free armor.
Yeah.
For you or an ally, which is awesome.
Yeah, there's a monk ability that's like that. Wow, fascinating.
I want to play this.
This is a lot.
I love it, though.
You have a lot of variety here in a way that I think sometimes you don't in Daggerheart.
Mm.
I think sometimes The abilities are the abilities in this game.
Only having 5 cards in your loadout, yes, can feel a little underwhelming when you are used to something like D&D where you have access to, like, I don't know, 20 spells.
Yeah. And so, I think that the Warden of the Elements, you have a lot of variety in what you can do. Mm. And it's so situational, right? Like, there's going to be times where, like, we need armor. Right. And so you're like, boom, we're going Earth. I have a +2. I actually have a +3 and everyone else has a +1. That's huge.
Yeah.
That's a huge ability, especially at, well, actually you can't get this to level 5, but
yeah. Yeah. It's not like something you get right away, but when you get it,
as
comes in clutch.
As a water druid, being able to move enemies around the field, you could like, and cause here's the thing, right? Like there's the firewall spell in this game. That is free to, I think you mark a stress and you cast firewall, but there's no duality dice roll. It just happens. And then you can use your water ability to move someone through the firewall. So like they attack and then you move them through the 30 feet through the firewall to close range. As long as the firewall is within close range of them, you could essentially just do a crap ton of damage to a character for basically free. Like one hope is such a small amount to spend.
In the scheme, grand scheme of things, absolutely.
But also, it seems a little broken because you
moving
could
people.
Yeah, like if
not really, because if you move someone within close range of them, they can still get to you.
No, because there's no save.
Kind of free.
It's just a hope, right?
Yeah.
Say you're fighting on a cliff.
Uh huh.
Gone.
Okay.
It's a little to kill somebody for a hope. For one hope is a little broken.
If you are specifically fighting on a cliff face,
Or on a ship, and you can, every time somebody near you acts, you can throw them off of the boat for one hope.
I mean, hey, if you're a water elemental and you're on the ocean, like, that's your fucking prime.
I think there needs to be some language that clarifies the limitations of this, because it is, if you're fighting in a volcano and you can just, for one hope, throw people in lava for free with no dexterity save or nothing, or sorry, agility save or anything like that, finesse save. It seems a little bit overpowered, the water one specifically.
Which is interesting because I felt like the water was the most underpowered in the original foundation.
I agree. Gaining advantage on agility-specific roles is fine.
Yeah,
it's definitely fine. The least useful of that level.
Yeah.
But yeah, this just seems... I'm not going to lie. It's, as a GM, my ears go, nope, no. We need to set some framework on what you can do with this because it is too low a cost for what the potential damage that you could do with it is.
So how would you balance it then? Would you say that you can only move them to a place that it has solid ground?
Yeah, because it says move them anywhere within close range of them. So why wouldn't you be able to throw them 30 feet in the air and have them take fall damage? Right? I think that it has to... I think that there has to be a limiting factor on this that it can... All it can do is move them. It cannot... put them, it cannot move them through or over or on or in anything that would inherently put them in physical danger.
Well, then what's the point of it?
To get them away.
You can't get them away because the thing is, you move for free within close range on your turn, so it then would be essentially a useless ability.
I know, it's just, it's such a low mechanical cost for something that you could instant kill.
Okay.
So often in an epic fantasy story.
Okay. Proposition, you have to move with them. Since you are like water, you have to like actually push them. They don't get a save on it, but
it's not really better, right? Because then
You can't really push them off a cliff cuz you'll go off a cliff.
But this stacks with your beast forms. So you would essentially be a water eagle that could murder on cliffs. It doesn't mitigate the problem I have with it, which is that it is too easy to commit murder in volcanoes, mountains, oceans, places where fights often happen in epic fantasy games.
Right.
I don't know. I don't know how you solve it. I think that it is just too strong for how much it costs. I think that you could
like attempt to move them.
Add a finesse check.
Sure.
Right? And or say like that your water, the water that you are putting out that moves them has to connect to something. So you can't throw them 30 feet in the air, and you can't throw them into lava, and you can't throw them off a cliff, because that where is your water source that is moving them in that situation, right? You can move them to the edge of the cliff because the water that you're like wrangling their feet with shoves them to the edge of the cliff. Because I'd be fine with you getting to the edge of the cliff and then as an action shoving them off, right? As a GM. I'm just saying that you can't move them 20 feet into the air because where is the water of your source doing that?
I assume
that?
It's like a wave. Like,
No, but that's my point. Like, what is that wave connected to? And that's where I think it just needs to be limited a little bit.
So the wave would have to be connected to whatever the ground is.
To the ground, yeah. I would say that you can move them to another place in the ground, which means that you could run them through a firewall. I'm fine with you running them through a firewall and then dropping them off on the ground in the middle of the firewall. I'm fine with that. You cannot drop them in lava for free. For essentially, it's one hope, but for essentially free, you can't drop an enemy in lava. Especially because there's no limitation on how many times you can do this. So a cliff fight, the druid can end the cliff fight by themselves in one enemy turn by everyone is 30 feet off the cliff, 30 feet off the cliff, 30. Like, because it's not even when they hit. It's not when they act successfully. After an enemy acts, they could use an action to get from far range to close range so that they could use an action on their next turn. And you could use this ability. It doesn't even say an enemy within range of you. Anywhere on the map, you can move somebody 30 feet for free. What? This is... No. Spencer Stark, fix it. Too powerful. It's broken. It's broken as fuck.
Yeah.
If you're on the ground and someone 60 feet above you is shooting an arrow at you and they miss, and for free you can move them 10 feet over and they fall 60 feet and die, for one hope? Nah. Nope.
Well,
I'm against
it. Here's
the thing. As a GM, I'm against it. It's too powerful. I don't... Because there's nothing you can do.
Here's the thing. It's only, like, a hope to, like, instigate it the first time. You can just, like, do these things after that.
No, this one costs a hope. You have to spend a hope to move them 30 feet.
Oh, you're right. You're right. Okay. I was no, you can just become that whichever element.
Yeah.
Okay.
It is just, if you have four hope, you can kill four people on their turn.
Depending on the terrain of the battlefield.
My pushback on that is that most of the time, as you're leveling up your campaign, you are fighting in more dangerous locations because it gives the GM more ways to put the party in danger.
Absolutely. It gives you so much to play with.
Yeah, and it makes your party think faster, right? We, in Roleplay Relay 1, one of my favorite fights in that was the Jin fight in the Final Forge, right? Because it was so much fun to watch you all navigate the lava and have to figure out how you were hurting this, the djinn and the what was that thing called? Woman, the hot succubus lady with the whip. It starts with an E, I can't remember. But so navigating them and
Ifrit or something, I don't know.
Her being able to fly around, it was just a great fight. Because of the space. But if our druid could have been like, oh, they took an action to hit me. I dunk her head in the lava for one hope.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just too OP. The water one needs work. Sorry. It is the first thing that we've talked about where I'm like, this has to change somehow. Because it can't go into the game like this. Because it's fucked. Like, the more I think about it, you're fighting on a boat, and you're like, I move them 30 feet down, and now they're drowning. In armor, they're dead.
Yeah. True.
Right? Like, yeah, it doesn't mechanically have enough of a cost. There's no save to just murk. Sorry, I know I went on about this. I've just been repeating myself. But, like, I'm thinking about it. All I'm thinking is more situations where this is the most overpowered ability I've ever heard of.
Yeah. I agree with you. I wonder if, like, they can, like, roll against it somehow.
I'm fine with, right? Yeah. Like a finesse 10 check.
Yeah, whatever
Although
it is.
Although, they don't have finesse. This is one of the problems with Daggerheart as a GM trying to figure out how to, like, come up with ways to talk about it.
Yeah.
Because the enemies don't have
the same ability
scores.
The players do,
It's hard to, like, roll against abilities sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gonna need some workshopping.
Yeah.
We'll look into it. But we do have one more card. That wasn't even the mastery level.
No. And it's the best ability in the whole game.
The level 5 level. All right. So if you master Warden of the Elements, When you use your elemental incarnation, you further embody the spirit and gain the additional benefits below based on the element chosen. So
unlike the bard ones, where sometimes it was about the rally, sometimes it was about, you know, other new abilities, mm-hmm. all three of these are based on the subclass ability.
Yes, they are very specifically directed towards the elements. So if you are a fire, when you deal damage with an attack or spell, you are at +1 proficiency.
Okay.
Sick. With Earth, when you should mark an armor slot, roll 1d6 on a 5 or a 6. You don't mark it.
Okay, so it's the Firbolg ability.
Love that. Water, when you are hit by an attack, you can take a stress to make the attacker vulnerable.
Great.
Pretty good. And with Air, you gain +1 evasion and can fly. Could you imagine if you were like a flying T-Rex?
Oh, so you just become, you can just fly all the time. Well, because it's just, what, to get into this form, it's just a stress, right?
Yes, you mark a stress to embody, yes.
Yeah, this sort of feels, that's a spoiler for Baldur's Gate 3, never mind.
Yep, don't do that.
Yeah, wow, much like Druids in Dungeons & Dragons, so OP.
Yeah.
The variety, the number of abilities, and that the water specialization ability being the most ridiculous thing I've ever read. This is an OP class. There's so much you can do here.
Yeah, I kind of love it. I'm like, like, I want to play a Warden of the Elements. Like, I'm like, oh, that's going to be my next character.
It's a GM's nightmare, right? Because there's so much to remember. There's so many ways in which your, like, different forms can impact different spells. And so it is, that's a nuisance class. Truly a nuisance.
I am a nuisance. Yeah. So.
Especially because it stacks. Like, the air giving you a further +1 evasion.
Yep.
So you get plus...
+3 total. And if you're in a like beast form that has any extra evasion, that stacks.
Well, all of them have extra evasion, right?
Okay, cool.
So
I wasn't sure if like, obviously T-Rex is not there. But like if you were a mammoth... It's a +4.
You get a +4 to your evasion as a mammoth.
What?
Yeah.
Okay, well...
But like the largest thing that you can be that flies is the great winged beast... Gives you a +3 to your evasion. Then your level 1 ability gives you +2 evasion.
And then the
your
foundation, gives you another
your mastery gives you another. One. And if you or an ally, your specialization as an air gives you a -d8 on ranged attacks.
Yeah.
So even if they do hit you, they have to hit you for big damage because you're going to be reducing that minus your armor. Because the great winged beast has an armor score of 5.
Gotcha. Okay.
So, like, the amount that you're able to get that down is wild.
That's fun. I love that. All right. We've got a different, not subclass.
Will
foundation.
The Warden of Renewal be as powerful a subclass as the Warden of Elements? Your Druid Warden of Renewal. Spellcast, Instinct.
Yes.
Your foundation ability is Clarity of Nature. Once per long rest, you may create a space of natural serenity around you. After spending a few minutes resting within the space, you can clear stress equal to your instinct trait, distributed as you choose between you and your allies.
Nice.
Huh. Interesting. It doesn't say that this is one of your rest actions. So I think that you can use this in addition to the 2 rest actions that you get on the long rest.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, yeah, especially this is one of those cards where it's like it's important to boost your instinct as a druid because if you can get to a +6, being able to clear 6 stress for free.
It's pretty nice.
Frees up your whole, like say you only need to remove 4 stress between your whole party.
Mm-hmm.
At level 1, at level 1, it's only clearing 2 stress though. Yeah, but even clearing 2 stress might be worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely think, like, if you are building this kind of druid specifically, you know, instinct is going to be your +2 because otherwise this is just, like, less good.
Yeah.
Obviously, your abilities are not maybe as good overall, depending on what you pick. Most of the time, the, like, suggested stats are, like, pretty spot on.
Yeah.
I would definitely say you want to go heavy instinct for your druid build.
Yeah, this is interesting. So the second ability that you get is regeneration. Touch a creature and spend 3 hope to heal 1d4 of their hit points. That kind of sucks. I'm not gonna lie, I don't really like their abilities because the troubadour, right, for free,
mm-hmm.
can play a song once per long rest and heal all allies one hit point, which could be seven people, depending on the size of your party.
Oof. I mean, yeah.
Three hope to heal 1d4 of their hit points.
Has a chance of healing four. Like, but it also has a
chance of healing one for three hope.
I know, and that's kind of the gamble of it, right? Because I look at that and I'm like, wow, four hit points might be someone's full HP at level one. Well, no,
six is the minimum, right?
Sure. Yeah. But, like, that's, you know, that's pretty great. And then when you are, when you're, because you're resting, like, they can rest and just heal the rest of them. So it's like, it's not bad if you roll really well.
Yeah.
If the dice like you, this is a really good ability.
Well, and if you're saving up hope for this, and then you roll a one.
Ooh, kind of feels bad, man.
Feels bad, man.
Yeah, I hear you.
The specialization of this form. You may use any of your foundation features while in beast form. Okay. That is actually pretty great.
Yeah.
Well, actually, not really. It just, you can use the one.
Yeah, you can regenerate.
No, this... No.
What?
That plus multi-classing. Broken. You can use any of your foundation features. Not your foundation of this.
Uh-huh.
Although, actually, I don't think you get I don't think you get the foundation feature when you multi-class. I think that you get their base class feature. So maybe that doesn't work.
Oh, true. Yes. No, you get their base class.
So basically, you can just touch a creature and spend three hope, or you can... If you're long resting in your beast shape.
Which you can.
I guess, yeah. Is there not a time limit on beast shape?
I don't believe so.
Beast form, you can drop out of this form at any time. Yeah. So you can just permanently be in your forms.
Yeah.
Interesting. Once per long rest, you can magically repair armor outside of downtime.
Okay, that's pretty nice.
When you do, you or any ally in close range of you clear a number of armor slots equal to your instinct.
Okay.
All right.
Hopefully by level 5, it's, you know, 3 or 4 at least.
Yeah.
Depending on how you are speccing your character. Definitely one of those things to keep in mind while you're leveling up. Like, what kinds of abilities you are you're using as a druid.
I will say, right now, this, other than the healing 3, the spending 3 hope to heal 1d4 of their hit points, this feels a little bit like a passive class, much like the rally ability I was talking about with the bard.
Yeah.
Where this doesn't really give the druid things to do, but more that their presence is just beneficial by the benefit of them being there.
Yes.
And so what
it feels more supportive than the Warden of Elements,
but not very actively supportive.
Mm-hmm.
It's you could carry a stick that has you have
someone with healing ability that is definitely useful, having someone
100%. I'm not saying that it's not. I'm just saying that as in terms of these abilities specifically, they are by making them not really be choices, but like that this one, no, because they're both just during your long rests. They're just kind of benefits to long rest.
Yeah.
Whereas the Ward of the Elements has the most broken attack in the whole game. It feels a little bit like, you know, it's, you're going to have to enjoy role playing the being the support, which I don't think D&D players are always the best at doing.
Depends,
but maybe Daggerheart players will be better at doing it than D&D. The mastery ability for Warden of Renewal, your animal transformation embodies a healing guardian spirit. While you are in beast form, when an ally within close range marks 2 or more hit points, you can mark a stress to reduce the amount of hit points they mark by 1. Oh, so you can basically remove a whole...
You can take
a severe down to a major. Or a major down to a minor.
Yeah, I mean, basically.
That's a great ability.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that it's like, oh my god, my friend might die.
Yeah.
I just have to spend a stress. I don't even like take that that hit point.
Yeah.
I just take the stress to negate it a little bit. Not completely, obviously, which I think is nice. You can't just totally, absolutely like nerf any damage.
Well, and it works in conjunction with the stress mechanic of the previous level, where you can clear at high levels 5 or 6 stress per night for free, right? Without getting into, this is a class where I think that you're gonna really have to play with your domain cards to give you other shit to do.
Oh,
because this doesn't really give you shit to do. It just allows you to maintain your other shit better.
And here's the thing. There are plenty of domain cards. So it's not like, you know, I feel like we've been focusing on just these cards because that's what this video is about. And that's what we intended. But if you have a bunch of passive stuff from your specialization and your mastery, that might be just fine with you because all of your domain cards are like very active, immediate, tangible things.
Yeah, I just think that like interestingly, the entirety of the Druid's ability is negated by the Elvish class. Like if you're playing as an elf, being a Druid of renewal is not functionally might be functionally not valuable to you. Mm. Other than your ability to clear it off other people, I guess, but like mathematically, if you're an elf and a druid, you're mostly just clearing people's stress on long rests, right? Yeah. That's what your whole subclass comes down to. Yeah. Feels a little bit light to me. And I feel like compared to the active things that the other classes... Troubadours get 3 different spells that they can basically cast at level 1 for free.
Yeah.
And this druid can heal for 3 health, which is... for 3 hope, which is a lot.
Yeah.
And can do you know during long rest do stuff. It just feels a little light to me.
Okay, yeah, I hear you.
It feels not very fun to play, but I think the gameplay side of it isn't as fun.
Yeah.
And so you're gonna have to find other. All I'm saying is you're gonna have to find other places within this subclass to do things mm-hmm. and not just kind of be present for things.
Yeah. I hear that. We have one more. Class that we are talking about today. Make sure you subscribe to the channel if you're like, wow, I like this video and I want to see the rest of the classes.
Or the codex videos we're going to do after that where we get into all the spells for each of the codexes.
Honestly, I'm really, really stoked about that.
Yeah, I'm excited as well. I'm excited to like learn about the spells.
Yeah.
It's going to be fun.
Yeah. If you're here, you're on the Roleplay Relay channel, so definitely subscribe over here. But if you want other nerdy shit... The Nerdy Night channel, check that out as well. We're over there doing nerd stuff. Anyways, the Guardian.
The Guardian's ability is unstoppable. Once per long rest, you can become unstoppable.
I'm unstoppable.
Your unstoppable die begins as a D4. Place it on the spot to the right, starting with a die's highest value facing up. While unstoppable, you gain resistance to physical damage, gain an additional d6 to any damage rolls you make, and can spend stress to reroll any single die you've rolled. Anytime you roll your damage dice, reduce the unstoppable die value by 1. When you would reduce the values below 1 or the scene ends, remove it and drop out of unstoppable. At level 3, upgrade your unstoppable die to a d6. At level 7, upgrade it to a d8.
Okie dokie.
I have a weird feeling about this one.
Okay, sure.
And the reason why I have a weird feeling about this one is it incentivizes you to not do anything.
Mm.
It is most valuable for you to go, I'm unstoppable. I'm going to sit in the middle of the battlefield and soak up damage. Because every time you attack, you get one closer to getting out of that form. And losing the ability to re-roll any die for a stress. Do you know how useful that is?
That's pretty fucking badass.
Oh, I rolled with fear. Wait, no, I'm going to re-roll my hope die in this duality die check on this attack, incoming attack. The enemy needs me to make a presence check? Boom. Nope, never mind. I succeeded with hope.
Yeah.
Making it anytime you damage somebody be the countdown of your ticker, it's one of the problems with Daggerheart, right? How do you incentivize the players not to just step back and let the one person with the super effective thing just do that repeatedly as an action?
Yeah, because it's not even... Because you have to do actual hit point damage, right?
No, anytime you roll damage. You don't have to do hit point damage.
Oh, okay.
Anytime you roll your damage dice.
Okay.
And so it like kind of benefits you as a guardian to not be attacking. Because then you're going to lose out on this form.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the only part of I feel weird about because the perks that you get from it are amazing.
Yes.
Spending a stress to reroll a die in any situation is incredible.
Yeah.
Absolutely incredible. Resistance to all damage, amazing. And, or sorry, to physical damage. And for when you do want to attack, getting an additional d6 damage is nothing to scoff at, when there were a number of times in our one shot where it was like, you're doing 49 like damage. Can you get over 50?
Two away. Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. It would have come in so clutch.
So yeah, the only thing I feel weird about it is it's like, but don't attack. Because if you attack four times or attack three times, and then hold out for the rest of the battle so that you can kind of use your turn, use your action turn to grapple, to...
So does it have to be a melee attack or...
Anytime you roll your damage dice.
Anytime you roll your damage dice. Interesting.
It's just it is a weird, like, don't attack people, do other stuff.
So I wonder,
And granted, there's probably, if you have great domain cards that allow you to, like, influence a battlefield...
That's without... what I'm just thinking, is that, like, what kind of domain cards would you look for? Like, would it be, obviously, you don't want something where you're going to be rolling damage dice, but that doesn't mean you can't not do damage. Like, yeah. there are things that will still deal damage without you having to roll those dice.
Well, if you multiclass this into a domain where you get a spell that... doesn't force you to roll damage dice.
No, like maybe you take two stress and it just does this amount of damage or yeah. whatever it is. Like,
there's just ways in which I'm like, it's cheesy. This could get real fromage-y, you know what I mean?
Sure. And I think that, you know, that is going to just depend on your table. Some people are going to love that they can do that.
Yeah, this is going to be...
It's going to feel fun for them, and for some people it's not.
Yeah, there's going to be a way to min-max this.
Yeah.
To really just make it so that, like, it is not valuable for you to get out of this form.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the bonuses you get from it are great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are pretty great. If you are a guardian, you can you can choose to be stalwart.
Ooh, stalwart.
Yeah.
I've been described as stalwart about my opinions on Attack on Titan.
Wow, we're gonna bring Attack on Titan in this? Oh God.
Come on, drop it. What does stalwart mean?
When you take this foundation, raise all of your damage thresholds by two.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So, minor, major, and severe damage thresholds all go up by two. That's pretty nice.
Which is pretty great, because as a guardian, you do start with 6, 11, and 16. So your minor starts at 8.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Then when you take physical damage, you may spend a hope instead of making marking an armor slot to reduce the damage by your armor score.
Sorry, what was that?
So, when you take physical damage, you can spend a hope instead of spending an armor slot... use your armor.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's great.
That's pretty fucking badass.
If you have a hope, why would you ever not use it, right?
Well, and that's the thing, is there's no limit on how many times you can use this per session, per turn, per rest, per whatever. It is just, if you have a hope, you can... Look, hope is, I would say... People call it a liquid currency in the game. It is very liquid.
Yes.
It comes and goes very, very quickly. And so... having a hope to spend is not going to be a rare occurrence.
Yeah.
You're going to be pretty tanky.
Oh, wait. No, you go. I'll read the other subclass. Sorry, my bad.
No, you're so fine. If you are stalwart, your specialization is that when you take this specialization, raise all of your damage thresholds by plus one. So they just keep going up.
That's it?
No.
Okay. That's good, but it seems a little light.
No. When an ally within very close range takes damage, you can mark an armor slot to reduce the damage by your armor score.
Oh, yeah.
Just plop down a kite shield.
Yeah, I think
or a tower shield or whatever.
Yeah, fighter has a feature like that. That's a sick ability.
Yeah, I love that.
Especially these work so in concert with the foundation ability.
Yeah.
Because if you're using your armor slots for other people and using your hope for armor for yourself, that's a lot of damage you're going to be tanking.
Yes. You're going to be soaking up damage as a guardian. That's kind of like, feels like your main role.
Well, and this plus a Warden of the Elements Druid in her Earth shape giving you plus two armor is so broken.
Woo! Spicy, I love it.
Like, that's a combo team that, like, I don't want to jam for.
Noted. Stalwart Mastery is, when you take this mastery, raise all your damage thresholds by two! So if you take all of these, it is everything gets raised by a plus five, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's nice.
You're bulky.
You also, when an ally within close range has two or less available hit points and takes damage, you can immediately mark a stress to sprint to their side and take the damage instead. So within 30 feet, you can literally, like, human shield your friends.
Yeah.
Like, full, like, dive in front of the bullet and take it instead. Or arrow or whatever it is.
Two or less available hit points mm-hmm. and takes damage.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and it's only when they are at low health.
Yeah, you can't use it if they're totally fine. But it's like a last resort if your friend is about to die.
Yeah.
Because death, you know, death in this game is pretty unforgiving. So yeah, you can literally throw yourself as a human shield in front of them. I think regardless of what your health is.
I think the
important... if you want to like martyr yourself.
Hey, you get that. You can be like, hey, I get that free crit hit. One thing I will say about this ability is it does not negate that damage based on your levels, your hit point thresholds. Mm-hmm. So if they're taking 2 HP, you're taking 2 HP.
Yeah, it doesn't look like you can then, you know, adjust your armor, shield, whatever to block it. It looks like you are taking that damage.
Well, actually, no, it says take the damage instead. No, I do think it does mean that.
No, but I don't think you can use an armor slot to negate it.
Because it doesn't say the hit points, it says the damage. No, I think you can. That's what makes it a mastery level ability, though.
I mean, I guess.
You take the damage instead. There's no reason why you wouldn't be able to use your armor class, and it would be against your thresholds. I'm actually taking that back. Based on a second read of this, I would say that this ability, it's a mastery level ability. You're doing this at really high levels.
I guess, so it should be great. You're sprinting across a battlefield.
Yeah, but you still have your armor on, right? So, I would allow my player to do the math against their damage threshold.
Yeah,
because
okay.
It says you take the damage instead and not you take the hit points instead or something like that.
Right. No, the way that it is worded, because it says damage, I think you're correct.
But either way, it's powerful, but I don't think it's broken.
Right.
So I would allow it.
Well, yeah, because, like, you know, you're still... Yeah. Just stay within close range of your allies if you are playing a guardian.
Yeah, group up. Your GM will love that. Stay nice and close.
I mean,
fireball.
All right. Bing, bing.
The final subclass we're going to be discussing today is Guardian Vengeance. The foundation ability for a Vengeance Guardian is when you take this foundation, gain an additional armor slot immediately.
Sick.
Yep. When you are hit by an enemy in melee range and use your armor slot to reduce the damage, immediately do damage to them equal to your armor value?
Oh, damn. So, it likely won't be high enough to do a hit point.
At low levels, it will.
Well, if your armor is like 6.
Yeah, but if you're a guardian, you're going to be in full plate, right? Plus a shield, probably. A guardian at level 1.
Yeah, what is the...
Because a full plate is +9, +2 from a shield. At level 1, you can do 11 damage with this ability.
Okay. That's
a major wound on a lot of minor enemies.
Sure, yeah. Whew.
That's crazy.
That's pretty spicy. God damn.
It is something that doesn't stay as strong as you level up. But absolutely. At level 1, that foundation ability is great for committing murder with your body.
I love that.
That's so powerful.
Committing murder with your body.
Your vengeance specialization
mm-hmm.
is when an enemy damages an ally within melee range of you, the next successful attack you make against that enemy has +1 proficiency. Oh, okay. So you kind of get you get an additional damage die because someone took damage.
Any attack you make, okay.
Against that enemy, gets +1 proficiency. Honestly, though, the only problem with this ability is mm-hmm. if you are... Because it has to be a person who's in melee with you,
mm-hmm.
you have to be within melee of... Oh, you know what this ability is great for?
What?
Giants. If you're playing a giant Guardian of Vengeance, then your melee range is extended to very close range. So it would be more useful there. The problem with this ability is going to be staying within melee range of your ally. And because, like, if you're flanking with your ally and there's an enemy between you, you're not in melee with your ally. You're in melee with the target, and the target isn't specified by the card. So this, you have to be standing literally next to somebody for this to proc.
Okay.
Which I don't know how often you're that close to somebody in a combat.
Well, yeah, I mean...
It happens. It is just... Like, if I honestly would change this card to stay very close.
Yeah, yeah, it is tough, right? Because, like, if you are the guardian in a party of a bard, a ranger, and...
A wizard.
Like, a wizard or something. Yeah, you're gonna be, like, first foremost up at the front, so... Yeah, it's tough, because it's in a way, it's similar to this, like, when an ally gets hit and with less than 2 damage, you can, like, sprint in and take it. But if you're not in a party that is built to have anyone else within melee range, like, up close and fighting alongside you, you might not end up using this very often.
And honestly, like, even if you do have another melee partner, how often are you in melee with the melee partner? And not, like, how often are you flanking somebody, or how often are you, like, both handling a different melee front side of the front line of it?
Well, there's no flanking. So, like, because Daggerheart isn't designed in the same way to use, like, maps and, like, miniatures, like, that's not going to matter a lot of times at the table, whether or not you're, like, flanking or beside or behind. Because some people are just going to play with, you are close enough to hit.
That's why I would change the language of this card to when you are within very close range of an ally who takes damage.
Yeah.
Just to give it a little bit less of, like, you have to be back-to-back with someone for this to work.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Last but not
the
least.
The +1 proficiency is good, though. I just would give it a little bit more range.
Yeah.
Guardian, Vengeance Guardian, mastery level. Spend a hope to mark an enemy until your next rest. When you make an attack roll against an enemy when you make an attack roll against an enemy you have marked in this way, you can adjust your hope or fear die by +1.
Oh.
That's interesting.
Interesting. Okay.
That's weak.
Yeah.
That sucks. Wow, that's as a mastery level ability, if I was a Vengeance Guardian, I would always multiclass, because that sucks.
Yeah.
Because here's the problem.
Because +1?
Ooh, actually.
What?
Okay, the only...
Oh, you can crit.
You could create a crit.
You could create... Okay. That is the only thing that I see about this that's useful, because, like, +1 to a hope or fear die isn't going to change whether or not it's with hope or with fear. You can either... You can make it a crit, and that's kind of it. And, like, yeah, +1 at level 10... Like, if you didn't get it by 1, that's going to be so rare. Yeah, I agree. I think that is only...
It's only useful if you're all a 12 and 11, 11 a 10, a 10 and 9, a 9 and 8, an 8 a 7. Yeah, I don't know. I don't like it. I think as a master level ability. Here's my problem with it. I think that the number of ways in which... Because we're mostly comparing this to Dungeons & Dragons, because I think that it's the game it plays most like.
Yes, and I think that it is a pretty baseline for most people who are going to be watching this, because you've watched probably Critical Role play Dungeons & Dragons, because Critical worked on this. I think that is very relevant.
If you care enough about this system... to watch us talk about it for an hour.
Then you probably know D&D 5e.
Is it Great Weapon Master that gives you a crit on 19 or 20?
Yeah.
It sort of feels like that, but you get Great Weapon Master at level 4. Mm-hmm. It's like if you got Great Weapon Master at level 18.
Right.
You know what I mean? You'd be like, this is situational.
Right.
Situationally, I can maybe hit, if my DM lets me know armor classes.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Or what, you know, the Daggerheart equivalent. And situationally, I might be able to, like, give myself a crit every once in a while. But other than that, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that I like that as a master level ability. I think that if it was, like, at the specialization level, if it was a little bit lower in ability, I think I'd be more into it. But I don't know that this is good enough to not... Compared to, like...
To not multi-class.
Compared to, like, Stalwart, the Stalwart one, the other, just to compare it to the other Guardian, you get +2 to all of your damage thresholds, and you get the being able to take a hit for an ally who's about to die ability.
Yeah.
Like, that just feels more helpful to me.
Yep.
I don't know.
Yeah, I
don't know.
Agree. I don't love that at all, actually.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't know if I would ever take it. I think I would multiclass.
I also feel...
Or I just wouldn't spend my level ups to master subclass, the...
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it might be worth it for the crits. It might be that, like, often enough you're like...
When we were rolling dice, it did not feel often enough.
But because we didn't have this ability. But, like, how many times are you sitting there looking at a 7 and 8 and being like, oh, it's just a 15? Because it doesn't matter.
Maybe. Like, it's hard to know. In hindsight, it's hard for me to go back and look. But it just...
Yeah, interesting. I don't know. It is just that you might get to crit more.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. Yeah. As your, like, final thing, like...
Yeah. I agree. I think if it was the specialization, maybe I'd be like, yeah, sure. Okay, sure. But I think for the mastery, it's kind of a little like, meh.
I'm surprised with it being vengeance that because it also doesn't have anything to do with vengeance.
No, like, I would have made it something like if somebody deals damage to you or whatever, or an ally or whatever, like, you get a boost.
Or, like when you crit, you triple your dice. You know what I mean? Like, make it something that's like, this person wants to do damage because they're angry. And so when they crit, they have, like, because in D&D, it's brutal critical, right?
Mm.
I think that, like, having, like, an equivalent to, like, brutal critical would have been fun here. It would have, I think, been a little bit more thematic. This, like, you can adjust your hope or fear die plus one. It doesn't really feel like vengeance to me. So, like, thematically, it doesn't really feel like what they're going for. And also, mechanically, it feels a little underwhelming for the level you get it at.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I definitely, theming it to be vengeful, I think would have been...
Because the other two levels are vengeance, right? When someone takes a hit, you can, like, you know, when someone hits you at level one, you do damage back. And then at your specialization, when an ally gets hit, you can then, on your return hit, do more damage.
Yeah,
this is just like you crit level, more.
Yeah, no, I think that the mastery of, like, vengeance, bless you, that should really tie in thematically to being able to, like, fuck up somebody's shit if they hurt you or somebody that you are fighting alongside.
Yeah, and it's just interesting that doesn't, because I feel like the other two abilities are really good. I think for the most part, the abilities are really good at tying into the theme of the subclass.
Yeah, definitely.
I think the tough thing with the Guardian is the theme of the sub of the class is a little tough. Mm.
Well, and like you said,
being,
like...
a Guardian feels a little bit like a waste in Daggerheart to me, because, and let me just, I... there is no opportunity attack. And so being a tank in this game is really hard to do, because you can move 30 feet as your action as an enemy no matter what. So locking creatures down to keep them from getting to your casters is really hard to do.
That could have been a great mastery ability.
But I think it should be...
Anytime someone tries to move past you or move out of your range, you get to hit them. Like, because if they're trying to get to your buddies, that, I mean, thematically, that would tie in enough for me.
I think that, I would even put that at the foundation level. I think that because there's no attack of opportunities, and because movement in combat is this kind of loosey-goosey free thing, DMs going after your weaker casters is so much easier for them to do, because it is really hard to lock down the battlefield in this game, because of the way that movement works.
Yeah.
Because of the sort of free nature of it, it's just, you can't just sidle up next to someone who's doing range damage and turn to your DM and go, here's the choice you have to make. Either you can step out of my melee range and I get to take an attack of opportunity and you can shoot easily at my partner, or you have to try and shoot around me, which, you know, impacts the attack roll. The way in which Daggerheart's movement system works, being a tank feels like it would be really underwhelming to me as a whole.
Yeah.
And so also getting an underwhelming mastery on top of what I think is already an underwhelming kind of class to take in the system is just that it's unfortunate.
Yeah, I hear you.
But they have a year to fix it. So, like, whatever.
Sure, yes. This is like the earliest version. Hey, maybe in a few months or a year, we'll be making a new video about how things have been adjusted.
You know what? Actually, it's actually even worse than that. It is specifically only against one enemy. So it's not even like you get... You might score a critical hit a little bit more often on one person. It's just not a master ability
to
me.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to... Because you have to mark an enemy, which kind of ties into the vengeance thing.
And you have to spend a hope to mark that. But, like...
You can adjust. Yeah. No, I don't like it.
On the off chance that you miss their evasion by one, or you roll two dice that are within one of each other, this is useful.
Yeah, but also, here's the thing.
At level, and it's specifically because it's at such a high level you get it.
Yes.
This would be a fine lower level ability.
Yes, but here's the thing as well, is if you roll your dice and you're like, I rolled a 15 to hit. And you're like, oh, that doesn't hit. Do I have to then stop and be like, okay, but like, would a 16, like, you know.
I mean, I typically follow, I learned it from Matt Mercer. I don't know where he learned it from, but that just misses. Meaning that I will, if you miss it by one, I'll say that just misses. And if you get right on, I say that just hits. So typically, like, I am a DM who, by the third round of a combat, my players usually can figure out what their armor score is.
For
unless
sure.
They've been rolling really weird.
Yeah. So, and that's also on the players to be paying attention to those kinds of things.
Because of this ability as a DM, I would say that just misses. So yeah. That you know that you can use your ability to hit.
But a lot of DMs do not want to give their players that information.
Yeah, because they think that it's weird metagamey and they don't like talking about the numbers.
Sure. Like, if that's how you're running your table, that is A-okay. But it makes this ability that much more difficult to use.
Yeah.
Because you have to stop and be like, okay, well, if I were to plus one it,
you missed with
matter?
A 15 and you hit with a 16 and I got a 15. He won't tell me that it's a 16 or she won't tell me that it's a 16, but I know it is, so I'm going to use my ability. I'm with you on that. 100%.
Interesting.
Weird to end on the one that we didn't like. Here's the
That's
thing.
Fine.
Here's, I just got to bring it back. I got to talk about this again before we end. This water ability has to change, Daggerheart. That is...
Don't change.
It's fucking unreal.
I know.
Like, worded as is, you can move someone 30 feet anywhere within close range of them. You can move them 30 feet straight down into the ground. There's no limitation on that in the card.
Yeah.
You could drive them through a wall.
Yeah.
The wording on the water ability, I get it. It fits on the card with less wording, but it as worded is so fucking powerful that it has to change for how much it costs. If it was like a ninth level spell, and it's your like domain card,
sure,
fine. You can whip someone across the map 30 feet in any direction.
Yeah,
but anywhere within close range of them is it's insane. It's so crazy.
Yeah, no, I hear
it's
you.
It's so game breaking.
I love it, but I'm also like, what a nightmare.
I pushed them 30 feet through raw stone.
Yeah.
They're entombed 30 feet under the ground.
Yeah.
They die.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying...
They suffocate.
As a GM, I would obviously say, no, you can't do that. Like, that's
you
not...
You need to see it or
but
whatever, but
the
yeah.
card doesn't limit it, and mm-hmm. I think that the card should. I think that it's just too powerful an ability.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I hear you. I'm sad about it, but I understand.
I mean, just being able to move them 30 feet on solid ground is already great, right? Again, it's not that great because the way that movement works in Daggerheart, which is weird, right? If you limit this ability, it's not that great because they can just close that 30 feet on their next turn.
That's what
for
I
free.
Mean. That's what I'm saying.
And so it's only useful when it is the most destructive version of it possible.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. It is the most OP or it's meh.
Or it's fine.
That's why I was like, how could we fix this? How could we tweak this? But I don't know. I think it's going to need some workshopping. For sure.
So I am only picturing all of the ways in which it's too OP.
Oh, 1,000%.
And so I get that there's normal ways to use this, but like...
Yeah. You could just like put someone like 30 feet above like a, like, what do you call, like a fence that is pointy and they fall and skewer themselves on a fence.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't really matter what it is.
The anywhere in this is the biggest problem.
You could teleport them inside of a dragon's mouth.
Yeah. It doesn't... Well, no, you have to move them. So you can't move them through a closed thing. I think that would be...
No, if the dragon is, like, breathing fire, you're like, oh,
it's the dragon's mouth open.
Yes.
I move them 30 feet into the dragon's maw as its jaws close, cutting them in half.
I mean...
It's fun, and, like, it leads to, like, it's... In a one-shot, I'd be like, whatever. You guys can fuck up my shit.
Yeah.
But for a long-term campaign, which is what they say the system is built for... That ability supersedes so many other spells, and it happens on the enemy's turn. It doesn't cost... It's, there's not a roll, so, like, the GM doesn't get an action token or potentially get fear from it.
No.
It is just murder.
It just happens. Murder.
All right, that's the first three classes. I don't know how long this video was.
No idea.
We'll that was probably long, later. But thank you so much for being here. Next week, we will be covering...
Ooh, what's next in the alphabet?
Yeah, I don't know. Next week, we will be covering the rain. No, it can't be the Ranger, Rogue, and Seraph.
Yeah. Because there's nothing in between there.
Oh, yeah. The Ranger, the Rogue, and the Seraph.
It's very second half of the alphabet heavy.
Yes, yeah, yeah. It's also like two R's, two W's, and two S's.
Yeah, and two S's, yeah. Yeah.
That's weird. Oh, yeah, Ranger, Rogue, and Seraph. And then the third week will be Sorcerer, Warrior, and Wizard.
Yep.
And then after that, we'll start going into the codexes one at a time.
I'm so excited.
This series might take us like through the summer.
I love that for
us. I thought we'd be discussing Daggerheart for a few weeks, but now it looks like we're committed. So, what up?
Oopsie.
Daggerheartians.
Subscribe. Hope you like to this. Commit, unless you're afraid of commitment, in which case, subscribe to face the fear of commitment and grow as a person.
I love that. Yeah. Just so you know, we are working on more Daggerheart stuff. It's going to be a minute because April, we're focusing on our Candela Obscura videos. If this channel can get monetized by Candela Obscura, those Candela Obscura videos will come up on this channel. Mm-hmm. I'm so excited to bring this story to you all.
We are so excited for Candela. It is going to be pre-recorded.
Yeah.
We've got so many cool things coming along with it. There's going to be some cosplay. There's going to be lots of cool photos.
We have a remarkable cast.
Yeah. Incredible cast. We could tell people. Yeah.
I'll be GMing the game.
Yeah. I will be playing should I say what I'm playing? I don't even know.
Yeah, sure.
I wasn't planning on
a big reveal. Big reveal.
Big reveal. Cool. I will be playing a journalist.
Ooh.
We have the incredible Alicia Marie.
Yeah.
Alicia Marie Body. I know. On Alicia Marie Body on, I think, Instagram and Twitter.
Go follow her. She's remarkable.
Incredible cosplayer.
Good get for the pod. Yeah. Good get for the pod.
Super excited for her to be here. We're also bringing back Fariha.
That's right. My favorite person.
Yeah. And it was so funny because we put out some Daggerheart videos and people were like, is that Fariha? And we were like, yeah, she's pretty cool. Whatever. She's a friend. Like,
Fariha and I met because we sat next to each other on a flight to Vegas.
Yep.
Had never met before. We ended up talking for like 6 straight hours.
Yep.
And she has been the first call that I've made on every project we've made since then.
Yeah.
And so
come play some TTRPGs.
Very grateful to her for showing up for Roleplay Relay 2 and then the Daggerheart one shots. And now for Candela.
For Candela
Our Oscura. Final player is the remarkable also cast member from Roleplay Relay 2.
Yes.
Victoria Shaz. So we've got an all-lady table.
Yeah.
I'm going to be putting you through it in some dark eldritch horror. Candela Obscura is a show that is a continuation of Roleplay Relay 2. It was one of the goals. It won't be a story continuation.
No.
But it was one of the goals.
It has nothing to do with
Santa Claus. When we passed the $8,000 mark for Cap for Kids, our charitable cause that we're doing in the holidays, they unlocked this Candela show, so we're doing it. I'm so excited. We're gonna be at the tables here telling a story takes place around a little apartment building called the Wingship. Mm-hmm. I'm so excited to tell that story. Alicia, Victoria, Fariha, and Clarissa are gonna be amazing players. That won't start coming out until May.
Yes, keep an eye out in May. That's why I said subscribe. Get over your fear of commitment.
But then in May, we're probably filming more Daggerheart stuff that will come out late. There's gonna be stuff.
There's stuff.
There's stuff, guys.
Yeah.
Also, if you have watched all the way to the end, thanks so much. I want to ask you, we do our Dragonlance show on the Nerdy Nightly, but this feels like our TTRPG show. Do you think we should move the live streams here once this channel's monetized?
Yeah.
Do you think that's a good idea? Do you think it's a bad idea? Should we keep that show over there but do everything else here? You guys are the audience. You tell us, because it would help. I don't know what to do.
It just feels like it's
on a channel with a bunch of other stuff over there, and it feels like it should be here in a weird way.
Yeah.
But also, that channel has like almost 60,000 subscribers, so like, will people see it if it's here? I don't know.
Yeah, that's what we're trying to figure out. So
yeah. Also, the Crit Awards. If you want to nominate us, please do. If you don't, nominate somebody else.
Right.
There are great people to nominate.
That is coming out. We did some cool TTRPG stuff. Roleplay Relay 1, Roleplay Relay 2.
Daggerheart, Dragonlance.
Dragonheart, Daggerlance.
I'm gonna create a system called Dungeons and Dragon Hearts and compete with both of them.
That sounds awful.
Yeah.
I hate
Matt
that
Colville,
you.
I'm coming for you. You heard that right, Matt.
You can sleep very easy.
If you like this video, like, subscribe to the channel. If you don't, hit the dislike button. Leave mean comments down below because the algorithm god is hungry and we must feed her. This episode, that algorithm goddess is...
The ability...